Okay, we're back. Well, Jim Chalmers has had some interesting things to say. He's kind of conceded that inflation could go above 5%. He's pretty much declared that the government won't reach its targets on productivity, not for 5 or 6 years. What is he doing here? What's the strategy?
Well, they've opened up the door on a recession, so it looks like they're managing expectations. He is, of course, did his doctorate on Paul Keating, and I couldn't help but think that there was a bit of, the recession we had to have that Paul Keating spoke about. And, I mean, you were in the middle of it. Talk us through what happened there.
Well, it was, I was away overseas with Hawke at the time. I can't recall exactly where we were. I think it might have been a regional forum or something, but the figures had come out to confirm the two consecutive quarterlies to confirm a recession, and was Keating's task as treasurer back in the country to articulate it. He was actually at an event and the phone rang in the kitchen and it was John Laws calling. He found out where he was speaking. It was 1990, not a lot of mobile phones. November 1990, and so he went to the kitchen and spoke to John Laws, and he came up with the line that this is a recession we had to have. And you know, he was doing all sorts of things around that. He was kind of saying that we controlling inflation is everything. He didn't say it at the time. He said it afterwards that the Reserve Bank had put interest rates up. They were too slow to react, and when they did react, they overreacted. But what he was doing, I think, was a bit of a wake-up call, not only to the country, but to his own Prime Minister and the Cabinet. Time for a bit of tough love, a bit of tough love politically. And as a result of some of the measures that followed from that, the government or the country did have a sustained period of economic growth. So he was right. But at the time, and I have read some interpretations of this, that he'd run these lines past Hawke. Well, that's not the face I saw when he was briefed.
What was the face that you saw?
On what had just happened. He was furious, right? And I think what his immediate mindset was, because just keep in mind, he'd won four elections. It was time to go, pretty much. It was Keating's turn. And it was after the election in 1990 and still Hawke giving no indication that he was going anywhere. So he felt paranoid. Leaders always feel paranoid when they're overseas anyway. They think that when they go away, everybody's scheming behind their backs. And he certainly thought that was happening. And he just couldn't line up the strategy, Keating's strategy, against that kind of paranoia. So initially it wasn't a great response.
Yeah. And what was his, when he came back, how did he deal with it?
Oh, they had the usual one-on-one. At least they had the ability to do that. And they would chat about it. And of course, Keating would have won the argument on logic, that clearly this is what's needed now, because we're in recession. We have to accept it. I don't accept at the moment, though, that either Jim Chalmers or Anthony Albanese, and maybe not even the governor of the Reserve Bank, are accepting that we'll go into recession on this count. Consider what the situation was back in 1990 when interest rates were at 17% for a home loan. Even though they called it the jobless recovery, because even when the economy did recover, unemployment was in double figures. So it's a different set of circumstances, and I'm not convinced this time that that's where we're headed, but we will, unless action is taken, and the budget's going to have to reflect that. So it was it was an interesting time in history, but now, you know, back to the present. It's a question, I think, of whether Jim Chalmers is going to have the support that he needs, and that Keating eventually got. The Reserve Bank governor did say, though, asked about the possibility of a recession. It's hard to get inflation down, so we might have to deal with that probably. But it was a bit ambiguous, and I think they're saying that dealing with the kind of overall situation and not accepting that recession lies ahead. What did you make of that comment?
Yeah, I think, again, expectation management. The RBA has been saying for some time that government spending is too high. This is before the Iran war. And Chalmers has been talking about making some tough decisions. There is talk of some tax changes. But I think, you know, what economists and the RBA really want to see is reining in government spending. Now, obviously, the Iran war, it is going to have a huge impact on energy costs and supply chains and the ability to manufacture things here in Australia. Even, you know, fertilizer has a lot of products which is, you know, the biggest input for most farmers, not to mention the freight to get it to market. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Australian public buy that as an excuse for what could be a really rocky economic period, potentially recession. When we were doing research when the Ukraine war hit, inflation was going up a lot. We asked, you know, respondents in all our focus groups, you know, who's to blame for this? Most of them said it was a combination of global events, global inflation around the globe. They did point to Ukraine and disruption of energy supply. There was also a bit of, I don't think the government is making some of the decisions they need to make. It was a bit of like, all of the above. And to be honest, they were probably quite right in that assessment. I'm not sure they're going to buy the Iran war as an excuse this time. They'll certainly factor it in making things more worse than they should have been. But in all our research, we're seeing, you know, this negative mood sentiment out there. They think the next generation will be worse off than their parents' generation. That was 56%. So I don't see how Albanese and Chalmers slip that punch.
Yeah, I think it'll be a factor in their minds, surely, because if the economy, if inflation continues to rise, interest rates go up again, they'll understand that's partly due to the war. But I think the government had already made up its mind anyway before Iran that this was going to be a tough budget and had to be, and that they knew that in this political cycle, this is the time if there's going to be a bit of political heat and they're going to have to take decisions that a lot of people won't like, now is the time to do that. So this will give them a bit of political cover. I'm not suggesting for a second you'd whistle up this as political cover. You don't want it. It's terrible. But I think it'll be a factor in the background. Now the South Australian election, and across all this, we'll be recording this. Well, we are recording this before the results are in. But the latest polls, the news poll showed that Labor had slipped a bit. From 44 primary to 40 over about a month. The Liberals are on 16 and One Nation 24. One Nation 24, Liberals 16. You know, there's the question whether that, if they were to record that kind of primary vote, and that's not a given, but if they were, does that necessarily mean they would have more seats? Because Anthony Green made an interesting point this week when he said that this is probably the first election he can recall when the nation is paying attention to a state election and they're not that interested in who'll come first. They're interested in who'll come second.
Yeah. I think he's nailed that. Because, you know, whilst we're seeing these incredible numbers for One Nation, we don't know how enduring they are. What was interesting to me is news poll said 40% primary for Labor, Malinauskas Labor.
40% the last figure, yeah.
Yeah, and that was his result at the last election. So status quo, which is a bloody good effort. However, he was in the 40. He was in the high 40s for a while. Last poll, as you said, 44% down to 40. I did notice in the last few days he took on Hanson personally, which tells me that their polling is showing them that they have lost a few points to One Nation, or there's a growing cohort of soft Labor voters who are Hanson curious. And he wants to nip that in the bud before it becomes, you know, something of a trend.
And why wouldn't he? Because the Liberals won 13 seats at the last election, and the suggestion is, you know, it might be single figures. Becomes a contest between One Nation and the Liberals as to who will have the biggest and who can claim to be the official opposition. It wouldn't matter to Malinauskas whether the Liberals win 13 or 7, I wouldn't have thought. And so there was that one line that I thought was quite effective. He said, well, Sunday morning when we wake up, I'll be in South Australia and Pauline Hanson will be in Queensland.
Yeah.
And he's trying to, I think, there portray One Nation as an imported product coming into South Australia. And it is, to an extent. There's been no real One Nation presence. So that's, I think that was quite a clever line.
Yeah, he's a generational politician, Malinauskas, and he's smart enough to be thinking about next term. He won't be cocky enough to assume he's going to win on Saturday night. He'll be keeping that in check, but I think he intuitively knows he's going to be Premier next week. But he'll be thinking ahead to next term, and will One Nation start eating into their territory more? and become a threat with populist economics. So, yeah, I thought very smart play, but it also shows that the smarter people in Labor recognise that none of us knows where this juggernaut is going.
Yeah, but even though Labor has lost a bit of support, it doesn't suggest they'll lose seats to One Nation. I think Anthony Green identified one seat where he's pretty sure that One Nation could finish second and therefore have a shot at beating Labor.
Yep.
But overall, the real contest is One Nation versus the Liberals, really, in the regions, and the Liberals versus Independents in other seats. Mm. And if they do lose numbers, it'll be because of that.
Yeah. And obviously, if One Nation records 20%, that'll be incredible. That'll reverberate all the way back to Canberra. However, South Australia is a little bit unique insofar as, you know, for that point I made before, Malinauskas is a political athlete. He was always going to win comfortably before the rise of One Nation, and he's still going to win comfortably after the rise of One Nation. So it needs to be sort of viewed in isolation. It's going to be a very different contest in Victoria where that One Nation vote might come back home.
Well, that's it for this week. You can write to us at back-to-back Barry's, or one word, back-to-back Barry's with an IE, at theguardian.com. So that's back-to-back Barry's at theguardian.com. And you can also now watch us on YouTube. This podcast was made on the sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri people. It was produced by Daniel Simo. Video production, Bird Nguyen.
The executive producer, Hannah Parks.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry. And this is Back to Back Barry's, a Guardian Australia podcast.